So, hi Pace. Hi
Hi,
Kelly.
Anne. Hey.
Nice to see you. I'm really excited today to chat with you about launches. I feel like both of you know, just like I said right before the cameras were officially rolling, that I feel that you're trailblazers really when it, not to overuse that word too much, but I really feel like you are when it comes to the type of offerings you have, but also in the way that you offer them out to the world, that actual the format, the feeling, and I think it's important for people, especially when they're learning how to launch, to have that additional perspective and give them the courage to maybe like make their own trail or their own path or their own type of launch. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. It's our pleasure.
So I will talk a little bit about what you guys have done together on your most recent launch, and then I'll do a little hot seat where I ask each of you specific kind of questions about things that I know that and that I've been part of that you've done. So first, I don't know, you know, if you guys just jump in, feel it out, whatever you want to do, but I want to know like about how you came together as partners on this specific project, you know, and what made you want to put this the way of the peaceful entrepreneur together?
We've been talking about this for how long, Kelly? Over 2 years?
I really have a hard time believing it was that long. But yeah, I think it was. Well, Pace and I like to talk about business. We have talked about our own businesses together, and we have worked on another project together. So I think it sort of organically evolved for us. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. The origin that I remember is we were bitching about a lot of the stuff that we saw in other places online about how it was so hard to find anything that had any kind of feminine energy to it, any kind of peacefulness, and everything seemed to be just like go fast and crush it. And it's like, well, what the hell? Like, where is something out there for people like us? Like, how did we learn this? We learned it the hard way. So wouldn't it be cool if we could put together something peaceful so that people
We
can learn
learned
to be
peace
peaceful?
the hard way. Well, yeah. I mean, I think it came from this kind of rejection of how things were done. So that's always, I think, a good, rich territory to explore. And we thought other people would be interested in that because we were.
And they were. And they are. Yay.
Yay.
So when you were putting everything together, was there a division of labor or, you know, someone who's more of like the planner, someone who's, you know, obviously I think both of you brought the content together and created that together, but was is there, because I definitely, it's not when because I'm in that course and I know that there's definitely different energies for both of you, so I know you must bring two different things to the table.
Yeah, for sure.
We planned the general idea of the course together on, just hanging out on Skype. And then we had a couple of sessions where we sat, we just sat down and divvied everything up and said, all right, well, who's going to do this part of it? Who's going to handle the back end sales stuff? Who's going to be writing the emails? Who's going to do the sales page? Who's going to create the content? And we came up with some general guidelines. Like, I talked more about the, we both talked about peacefulness, and Kelly talked about passion, and I, no, we both talked about profit, and you
Profit.
talked about
Passion.
passion, and I talked about peacefulness. So that was
Right.
sort of like a vague,
But the hack.
shifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then we got really, really specific and made sure that we got down to individual tasks so that things didn't fall through the cracks. But I think the best thing that we did to make our launch peaceful was that we divided it into three tiers. We had tier one, which was stuff that absolutely has to get done before the launch. And then tier two was things that would be a good idea to do, but if not, nothing horrible happens. And then tier three is like, oh, it would be nice. And we ended up doing, I think, all of the tier ones, most of the tier twos, and I did one of the tier threes, which is like make the jingle, like this little cool meditation, because it was fun. I think that's about all we did.
And I'm so glad you did that, because I think I was telling you, Kelly, that I've listened to that a few times just because I'm like, I actually didn't expect it to actually relax me for some reason. And then when it did, I was like, oh, I'm doing this again for sure. You know, because I'm definitely like the as far as like the energy level, this is like the, it's not even like I want to be peaceful. I need to be. So, and it's hard for me to get there. So, so question then, did you have people also supporting you? I know, Kelly, you might have help and have a VA. Did you have people helping with any of those kind of must-dos and hopefully will-do and, you know, all that, those different tiered lists?
Right, all the tiers. Mm-hmm. I did have the support of a VA intermittently. You know, she's not like full-time for me. So it's just sort of occasionally, you know, some of that administrative stuff I was able to hand off. But, you know, just having two people makes it worlds easier. I highly recommend if you can find a partner that you know is really on your wavelength, it makes launching really fun because it's like a team effort. And so just by virtue of the two of us divvying up all the things, we got a lot more done than probably either one of us would have done on our own.
Yeah. Anything more, sir? I don't know if you're going to say something more, Pace, about that. But, yeah, I think that that's, like, one of the hard lessons that you learn when you try to do something completely alone is that it's tough. And there are a lot of pieces no matter what kind of way you launch. There's just a lot of pieces and a lot of stuff to think about that you don't think about until you have to and you realize it's too late. So then when you were putting together the launch itself and all of the content and the different things and the different media, the different formats of things that you offered, how did you decide to do that? And what was your kind of idea with the launch that you wanted to, what did you want to achieve in the launch? Like, you know, what story did you want to tell?
I'll give my answer, and we'll see if your story is the same. So we'll see how good of a job did we do communicating getting our story straight. So we wanted to lead with the peacefulness, because that when we came up with the content for the course, we had so many things we wanted to cover that we said, okay, well, we can't squeeze this all into the course, so let's give basically half of the course away for free as pre-launch content so that people will be helped by it and that they'll say, oh, hey, they really know their stuff and let's get on the list and let's maybe buy the course. So the peaceful stuff that we teach was better suited to pre-launch content because the business side of things really is kind of linear. It builds on itself. So, but the peaceful things are things that you could hopefully take and apply immediately that will help you. So we did a whole lot of peacefulness pre-launch content. Like I recorded a couple of videos and, you know, other content that we gave away and we basically practiced what we preached and used the sales funnel that we talk about in the class, which is help people get to know, like, and trust us by giving away things that help them, mm-hmm. get people on the list, and then say, we'd like to help you even more. So what's your story, Kelly?
Absolutely. I mean, just to break it down a little bit further for your audience, you know, we were in a position to be marketing to who we were a couple years ago, you know. So we had this nice lens of saying, well, what have I learned in my journey that has given me the most leverage or peace or, you know, helped me see things in a way where I can do it on my own terms. So that was really helpful. That's very nice to have been in our own target market. And then telling our story of, you know, we took in all of this information about how to do things, and we discovered there was a better way. And that was a consistent narrative. And then for the pre-launch content, and I think this is pretty you know, common, but what we did was try with the, specifically with the free call that we did,
mm-hmm.
we wanted to give people an overview of the curriculum that we had designed so that we mapped out the curriculum pretty early so that we knew how all the little pieces fit and which pieces we were going to give away. And just like Paige said, you know, the more immediately applicable, peaceful tools were really good for pre-lunch because you didn't need a lot of extra information or framework to implement them. So that's totally right on. But then for the call, we gave people the lay of the land so that they knew what they were getting into and exactly what we were going to talk about, or more or less what we were going to talk about. So.
And they got to hear you together. And they got to hear you together, too. They got to hear you together. So it was more of like they got a taste of what it was going to feel like and what they would experience in the class, really. In the class.
And that's really important because I've been on so many of these, you know, free teleclasses that are basically hour-long sales pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And God, I hate that. It's horrible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, tell me something useful that I can use.
Right.
So, you know, we wanted to make sure that we gave people a taste of what the class would be like, even though it was sort of an overview, instead of just trying to sell people over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're sick of that.
I definitely, I have to agree on that. And, like, I always, like, look back to, like, selling Pilates because that's what I'd have to do when I was teaching. And I never sold. I would just give them a good experience, and they pretty much knew coming in if they wanted to, and if they had a good experience, I might change their mind if they had a good experience. But people know, and I feel to some extent, I mean, maybe it's me copping out not wanting to sell, but, you know, I feel like people know what they want to buy and know what they want to buy, and they're just looking for that confirmation almost that it's right for
them. Yeah. I wanted to point out, I think you're totally right, and I wanted to point out, too, just for the people watching, that the way we structured our pre-lunch content, the only thing that you opted in for was that free call. Everything else is totally just free for the taking, no mm-hmm. opt-in. And so that may feel a little different than some launches that people do where it's sort of these breadcrumbs that you sign up for. We just wanted to kind of like, you know, put it out there mm-hmm. and let it help people and have goodwill around it. And then if you really were interested, then you opted in for the free call. So,
yeah. And then that also lowers the complexity of what they have to do. The people who are setting up the launches actually have to do. You just put it out there mm-hmm. publicly. You don't have to make all these web forms and, you know, tracking and Google Analytics and all that stuff. You just put it up there, let people like ingest it or eat it up or whatever, you know?
And share it.
Share, and hopefully tell other people about it. So.
Right, exactly. So question is, do you feel, the one thing that I'm definitely getting from the people inside is they're not sure that they're actually speaking to the right people. And that's a big problem because if you're not sure who you're speaking to, or you're not even sure you're speaking to the right person, that can cause a little rockiness on your lunch. And I'm just curious what you think about that, about speaking to the right person. And, you know, I know, Kelly, we talked very briefly about this and about the people who came into the course. And I'm curious, like, what you have to say about that.
So would you like me to start with what we did or what we should have done?
Oh, no, what you did. Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was like a little bit of a loaded question. Yeah, like what did you do first? What was your focus first? And then maybe what did you realize as, I don't know, maybe what you would change, maybe?
Yeah, well, it's an art, I think. As you know, there's a little science, a little art in it as far as finding who you're talking to. And I think for me, and Paige, maybe you want to say what your process was with this, but I really tried to remember to really, really get in touch with the frustration and the things that I was stuck on earlier in my journey and like really try to get really clear feeling. And for me, it's sort of an empathy exercise, you know, to try and put yourself into someone else's shoes and be like, what is it that is just they want relief from, and not in a desperate buyer's kind of way, but just like you just want to really tune into what the solution is for them, because there's so many ways to help people and so much information you can give them that it's really, really good to have one person in mind. And for me, I was sort of, you know, an earlier version of myself as my avatar. And to get really concrete about it, something I might suggest to people who are starting their project is to definitely have beta testers for your offer. And if you can find one person who's really like, yeah, I would do that. That sounds great. Like, and you can trust their, you know, feedback is objective. I think that's a really good, you know, way to kind of hone in. You can sort of think of them when you're putting your materials together and sort of keep that person in mind. Because I think the more concrete you can be, the better. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, things do evolve and change. And I think that the blend of our two, of Pace and my, you know, kinds of experience and what we wanted to bring made it into something much more than I would have created on my own, you know, from a course standpoint. So, mm-hmm. So I think we actually had a kind of dual audience. We sort of brought in an interesting blend of people. And I think it's worked out really well. And, mm-hmm. but I don't know that we anticipated everybody that we would have, that we brought into the course, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
The one thing that I didn't anticipate was the experience level of the people who showed up. I was expecting to be mostly total newbies, people who were, you know, wanting to get into online business, but had been scared off by the crush it mentality. Mm-hmm. And it ended up that the majority of the people who signed up for the class already had a little bit of experience. Either they dipped their toe in the water or they had a business and wanted to redo it in some way, or they had a new idea that they, or they just wanted to bring some peacefulness into their business. Mm-hmm. So that was the one thing that I found really interesting. And we only learned that late in the launch. In fact, it was during the free teleclass when we said, all right, now everyone, you know, raise your hand if you already have a business. And most people raised their hands and we said, what?
You're like, oh, hello.
Now, I think if we had done a little bit earlier, if we had done a little bit more market research earlier, we could have found that out and tailored our offer and our sales page even more. Because by that time, we had already made our promises that we couldn't make a large course correction at free teleclass time, since it was about the open registration. Mm-hmm. Our registration was already open. People had already, you know, given us money based on what we had promised them. So I think ask more earlier and listen more earlier. Mm-hmm. I think we did it, you know, I think it worked out fine. But I think we could have been even more focused if we had asked and listened more earlier.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, and I love it. I think it's a great mix of people completely. Every single person I've talked to every week I've walked away with something, you know, something that I didn't have before. So I definitely think it ended up being the right mix of people.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So let me ask you about this one, you know, just because I always have to ask about tools and things that you use that really worked well or that you don't like, you won't use again. Anything from like web, I don't know, themes, whatever you use. Like, are there any tools that stood out for you that you used, whether it's a planning tool or, you know, I don't know, anything, any tools that you use that you would recommend for first-time peeps?
We used Google Docs to share our plans and outlines and to-do lists. Mm-hmm. That's really useful when you're collaborating with somebody. Mm-hmm. Mostly, we just used the same old stuff we use, like, you know, WordPress. standard suite.
Pace, we used a thesis theme skin. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I took the theme from the Connection Revolution website and then just modified it a little bit. So this is a general principle that I really like to do, is when I pay for something, I want to pay a little bit more so that I can get something that I can repurpose instead of paying for a one shot. Mm-hmm. So when we hired our web designer, Rhiannon Llewellyn, to design our website, we said, all right, well, we wanted to make this into a thesis skin so that I can actually just upload it and then make a few little changes, give me instructions on how I can do it myself, because I'm not a web designer. I like to meddle, but I'm not very good at it, so give me instructions so I can't do more harm than good. And so I was able to take that thesis skin and install it on the Way of the Peaceful Entrepreneur website and just change the colors around a little bit and upload our logo and our motto and adjust the spacing a little bit and make a really nice looking website without having to pay for the cost of a second website. And it looks, it also is really nice because it has that brand harmony that, given that it's a joint venture, we could only be harmonious with one or the other of us. In this case, it was me since I have the skin. And so if you look at connectionrevolution.com and then you look at thepeacefulentrepreneur.com, you see, oh, hey, there's something going on here. I haven't gone into a new unfamiliar country.
Yeah. But at the same time, I have to say, I wasn't like, oh, they use the same skin. And I'm actually one of those people who is always looking at view source of like people's websites and inspecting elements so that I can recreate them on my own. But like, so I didn't even think about that. It definitely wasn't a jarring kind of change, but I definitely didn't think, oh, they just pulled that over there. I thought it was just a new site.
So, nice.
Yeah. So nice meddling job there.
Do you want us to talk about what we use in the course as well?
Yeah, definitely. Because I actually really, that how you're doing it is how I'm doing it for this one. I'm not using, well, you can go ahead. Tell me about what you're using.
Well, Dave, I want you to talk more about this, but I was going to say we do use Maestro Conference for the classes, the live calls that we have as part of the course. And that has been new to me, and it's been really fun to dabble with a little bit. And we have a private Facebook group. So that's worked out really well, as I think that's becoming the new forum, is having a Facebook group, because everyone's already on Facebook. So just if you're thinking about having a forum, just have a Facebook group, because it's a lot easier.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. And Pace, maybe you can say something about our instructional design principles.
Yeah. I love Maestro Conference because it allows students to interact more. And it turned out that we had so much material to cover that we haven't been able to do as much student interaction as we would like. But Maestro Conference has a bunch of really great features. Like you can put students into breakout groups with each other and say, okay, now discuss this in small groups and various things like that. The other one that I've used is Instant Teleseminar, and it's good, but Maestro Conference is better for teaching because it has more student interaction kind of features.
Very cool. Yeah, I've never used that before. And what was your decision to have or not have a membership area? What did you choose? Is it just ease of putting it there or putting it on like a
One of the things that we teach in the course is that, Kelly told the story of being an entrepreneur is like moving to New York City, mm-hmm. that it feels really daunting, but once you get your foot in and once you make one friend, then it seems like a more friendly place, the world of online business. So we wanted to encourage people to support each other and make that first friend, because Kelly and I can't be there to support everybody in the class individually. So, from a business point of view, it makes sense because people teach each other. They're basically doing our jobs for us. And from a helpfulness point of view, it's good because we've heard from several people that they've gotten some of the deepest insights from other students rather than from me and Kelly. And part of our instructional design is that every week you have a rotating assignment buddy that you call and you discuss the weekly assignment with. And we've gotten mostly really good feedback about how that's been helping people get the material to really sink in.
Yeah, and I think it gives a bit of a workshop and, you know, feel to it. If I can say, okay, I'm working on my, you know, where I'm trying to figure out where my people hang out. So I'm going to post to the Facebook group, and you have suddenly, you know, 30 other people who are giving you feedback in this, you know, whenever it's convenient for them, which is fabulous. You know, so many more insights can come from the collective wisdom than just us delivering knowledge in a lecture.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely find that in past courses that, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the membership areas that are all built out. And like, I feel like people actually get lost in there and don't communicate with, they just kind of lose contact with the other people in the course. And then they like scramble around at the very end to try to like connect with people. I really have liked how it's been all laid out. And I think that the Facebook group, I think you're right, Kelly, like about it's where people are hanging out. Get them where they are already, you know, a lot of the day. Yeah. So,
one less login.
Let's see. Now I want to ask you specifically, I'll ask Pace first. So Pace, one of the first, I guess, like, it's so hard for me to call the 52 Weeks Awesome an e-course, because to me, e-course, I was just saying this to someone in the group, that e-course feels so small, and 52 Weeks Awesome is not small by any means. I feel like
it's right there in the name.
You know, I mean, just on length alone, but like, you know, so, you know, I was in that. I was not good at turning in my assignments. Louise tried to get me, but every time I would get on a roll, then I would just lose being able to do it. But I appreciated those emails every single week, and very often they would definitely be totally tied to something going on. Or I would be like, someone's psychic, and it could be Pace. So I'm just, you know, with a lot of people looking to put out e-courses, and I know both of you have expertise in that area, and there's the Engaging E-Courses program as well, program that I even swipe that up as well, because I'm a maniac. But I'm just wondering, like, what kind of advice would you give people, like, knowing, I mean, maybe you can first tell us a little bit about how you launched that, and was that your first, one of your first things, or was it one of your first big things that you launched?
It was our first big thing, of this incarnation of our business. It was the first big success that we had, and again, like, tying into the theme of what Kelly was talking about earlier, it's about going against the grain of the common advice. Mm-hmm. So whoever releases a 52-week-long e-course, and also that I've heard the common wisdom that pure personal development doesn't sell, mm-hmm. that it has to be like 52 weeks to building your business, and, oh, by the way, we're going to teach you to be awesome. We're just like, we're going to teach you these life tricks instead. So, you know, it's this ridiculously long course, and because there's so much to cover, it has to be that long, and it's, it's pure personal development, and it was really popular. I think it was the reason for that is because it was really, really harmonious with the message of the Connection Revolution. You know, that in order to change the world, you first need to change yourself, and you need to heal yourself before you can heal the world.
Right. Right.
So I kind of rambled about it, but what was the actual question?
I'm just lost in what you're saying about it, because I actually really enjoyed it. Okay. The question is, how did you approach launching it? Because I think I found it after the launch. I don't know how I found it, actually.
Yeah. We decided to launch in December because of the New Year's resolution.
Right.
Because we figured that would be when people would want to make a year-long commitment. So we got people to pre-register before Black Friday, because then after that they have no money. We encouraged people to give it, you know, give the gift of awesome if they were shopping for presents for people. And then a year later, we took all of the feedback that we've gotten from the mission debriefings from the first year's students, and everything that we had learned about how to deliver a more engaging e-course from Indeed eCourses. And we put together 52 Weeks to Awesome 2.0, which added audio so that people with different, mm-hmm. Learning styles would get more out of it. It added reminders of why you actually care about doing the work, which helped with people kind of falling off the wagon and losing their motivation. We actually have people at the very beginning answer the question, why do you care? Why did you sign up for this? And then using, the magic of MailChimp, we repeat that back to them every single week and say, reminder, here's your note to yourself. Here's why you signed up for this. So we're outsourcing the, because it's going to be different for everyone. So,
right.
We implemented those two and about, six different other improvements. And then we did another big relaunch of it there at the same time of year.
Now, for the launching itself, you asked people to pre-register, but was it basically to the audience of people that was already, that you already had? Or were you, mm-hmm. were you putting out content? How did that work? How did that look?
For that one, we did a less big launch because it was a lower priced product. And we did a free teleclass. And we spread the word far and wide through all of our ambassadors, which is our, fancy schmancy way of saying affiliates, because
mm-hmm.
we feel like these people are representing us, and we like ambassador just sounds way cooler than affiliate.
Mm-hmm. Your
and,
street team.
we encourage people to spread the word and invite people to the free teleclass, and that worked really well. And then at the free teleclass, we did the exact same thing that we did for the Way of the Peaceful Entrepreneur. We gave people a bunch of useful, helpful advice and gave people a kind of an overview of the general principles of what we mean by being awesome. And then said, we're offering this year-long e-course, and if you want to go into detail about all of these things, then sign up for them.
Cool. So my question then is going even further back, just because some of the people that I'm encouraging right now haven't done any launches.
Uh-huh.
For you, Pace, what is the one kind of lesson or piece of advice that you learn, in those first launches? Because it seems like it's just about doing it, but maybe there's some other piece of wisdom that you can pass on to.
Yeah, I've had the two biggest things that I learned when I was just getting started. One is just do it. Don't wait until you're ready. Don't wait until your audience is big enough. And when it flops, and it will, don't think that it's because you are a failure. Think that it's because there's something that you haven't learned yet. And then as soon as you change it and get it right, then things will change for you. As an example of that, it wasn't really a launch. It was just a survey, but we we offered a survey and got 6 responses out of a list of almost 2,000. And I was like, holy crap. And I had this moment of panic and said, is nobody listening to us? Is our message completely off? Do our people just not care anymore? Oh no, what's going on? Our whole business plan is in danger, et cetera, et cetera. And then no, we just needed to make it easier and give people little ticky boxes to tick. And then ask them the exact same question after getting them to tick some ticky boxes. And we got 100 responses. It's ridiculous. So don't doubt yourself just because you have one setback. There's probably some little thing that you can do that will make, a 10 times difference mm-hmm. in how people will respond to it. And the second thing that I learned when I was just getting started is that, how do I say this? Be nice to famous people. And hang out with them. And if you can just be friendly with famous people and not get starstruck and just say, hey, I really like the work that you do, and interact with them on a personal level, then that can really help you get started. like, we had a tiny list for the first couple of years that we were in business, but we were still getting, you know, over 100 people to register in 52 Weeks to Awesome and various programs like that, because we had ambassadors who had these huge reaches. Mm-hmm. And not only did that help us fill our programs, but it helped us build our own list. And so I, like, every person that you get on your list is one person that you get on list. But every person that that who has a large reach that you become a colleague of and mutually help each other out is, like, you know, like 1,000 times more than that.
Yeah.
So that's my recommendation for getting started, is just, like, be helpful and nice and friendly to people with large audiences.
Or who are, you know, maybe a little bit like a few steps ahead in some way.
Yeah.
To you, maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be, like, you know, super huge A-listers. It just has to be...
Does that
know,
mean I have to be friends with Gary Vaynerchuk?
No, you don't have to be friends with Gary Vaynerchuk.
I want to crush it. Thank you. Thank you, Pace. Kelly's been waiting over here so patiently, but I did see her sneaking some notes, because Pace knows how to talk about launches like crazy. And she's like, oh yeah, I got to take that down. You are like the Zen of launching. Seriously.
Pace really is. But it definitely triggered some thoughts. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So Kelly, I first became aware of you because of Sticky eBooks. And so obviously I want to ask you about eBooks first, but also, you know, I think that, well, first let's start there. I won't get ahead of myself. Or I'll ask you like 5 questions. Go. No. So, you know, first time out of the gate, what did you do when you were launching your ebook? The first, I'm not sure. Is that the first thing you launched?
That was the first thing I launched.
Okay. So
an ebook, interestingly, an ebook is not the first thing I recommend you do.
That was going to be a question, by the way. So thank you.
Because I was starting a business. I started a business to help people create and launch ebooks. So that first ebook was so that I could say that I had done it. Basically,
gotcha.
It was my own personal learning journey, but also hopefully a case study and success and that sort of thing. Generally, the reason that I don't recommend you start with an ebook is because it's a lot of time investment, and just writing something of any length and formatting it. And it costs you a lot of time and energy, and it's sort of, there's a lot quicker ways to get products to market, you know, do a teleclass, do a couple webinars, do something that's a little lighter and you can adapt and adjust more easily. You know, something more agile, I guess you might call it, is where I would start if I hadn't specifically been in the business of helping people with eBooks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, it turned out to be a great learning experience, and definitely I've never regretted doing that ebook, but in that initial, when I was just starting out, when I had like 50 people on my list, it was a marketing exercise. And usually people start with free products, but I really wanted to go through and the launch process for myself and just do it. I needed to get over the hump of, like, you know, free content. I was like, what is this going to be like to ask people to pay for something that I've created? And it's a very different feeling, and it's very fun once you get a little taste of that. But it wasn't necessarily just a revenue. My goal wasn't revenue mm-hmm. for that. It was paid, but I wanted a bigger presence, and I wanted to be someone with an offer and sort of get my feet wet in that arena. So it had a sort of different purpose.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not just, I mean, if you feel like an ebook is right for your audience, or you know, it's definitely, or you just love the idea of creating one, or that's your preferred mode is writing, of sharing information, then by all means, go for it. My advice to those people, to people who want to do ebooks, I mean, there's so much that's particular to your market, and first ask yourself, are the people who I want to reach, do they read ebooks? I mean, that's really the first question. It's really meeting people where they are. If they want video, maybe you should think about giving them video. Now, what we learned from engaging e-courses is the more formats you can offer, you know, the greater the appeal, because everybody has different preferred, you know, learning styles, or maybe one person wants to listen to an audio version in the car, that sort of thing. But if you have your heart set on an ebook, really, really get very narrow. Even probably you need to cut your topic in half, because most people want to include everything they know about a subject, and they think it's adding value when in fact it just confuses and overwhelms. So I would much rather see people take what they think their first chapter would be and really, really go deep into that and break it down for somebody and get really clear, because I think that will be, in the long run, people will engage with that material if it's not everything in the kitchen thing. So.
Right. Right. I mean, what do you think about people? I've noticed a little bit of a trend lately, you know, honestly, even in myself, my original like idea for my ebook, but I didn't do that kind of, I was like, kind of, but I did notice that some people now are doing the Firestarter sessions, the first kind of incarnation of it, where they, you know, that really is their model. And they're even like, I talk to people and they say that's their model. So I'm just curious what you think of
in the PDF
and like just making it more than just an ebook, making it, I guess, more of a course. What do you think of that?
Again, I would just go back to what does your audience want, or what are they like? I mean, I think for Danielle Laporte's audience, you know, being really edgy and cool and multimedia makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what she's about, or her brand is very, you know, lends itself to that. If I were targeting maybe, I'm trying off the top of my head to think, maybe people who are more academic, or perhaps the material lends itself more to worksheets that you might want to print out or things like that, you know, that's something to consider. You know, what is going to really support the messages and the material, and what do people find easy to interact with? I personally got the Firestarter sessions, and I don't think I watched half the videos because I like to print things out and read them, or I was in an office where maybe there were, you know, I didn't want to be watching video or something. Exactly. I wanted to be more discreet. So you have to, you know, if someone has a day job, you don't want them to be like, you know, jamming out on their headphones.
Yeah.
There's just little things like that, just trying to get inside your audience's shoes. But I think it's really cool if you, you know, mm-hmm. If you have the ability and the inclination, like, layer different kinds of media and see what happens. I'm sure the experience will be rich and interesting if your audience is up for that, for sure.
Yeah, no, I definitely think you're right on, and focusing on the audience is really key, because I think one of the things that happens when you're, well, that has, I'll say personally, because I don't want to speak for everybody, but that you get stuck in the, what am I, stay in yourself somehow, even though you're thinking that you're not, you think you're thinking about your audience, you're actually still thinking about what you want to do, but you have to combine that with what the audience also wants.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely think that's one of the challenges that I'm actually now just seeing a lot of. And I think that's only happened because I've gotten away from, I always try to take it out of myself as much as I can and think, what does this person actually need from me? You know? So I think that as soon as you can start doing that more and more, you know, I think that's.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I always encourage you to bring in other people to get other opinions whenever possible. It's always better to get more feedback as early as possible.
Yeah.
The other thing that popped to mind when you were, talking just now is that complexity can often be an excuse for us not to finish or do something. So as we have all done with our websites, I'm sure, and you know, any other project, the more factors and things you add in, you know, it'd be best to decide, okay, I want an ebook and I want it to cover these things. If I have time, or it seems like, you know, it's easy enough for me to add video, cool. If I want to add some worksheets later, great. But the minimum viable product is this ebook that's going to cover this material.
Yeah, so. I love that. And I think that, you know, applying the tiers that you were talking about, PACE, is actually really great in that. And just saying, what's my minimum viable product here? What am I doing? That'll be awesome if I can do this, and this will be amazing, you know, if that happens too.
Yeah, the cherry on top.
But I would say launch it after you're done with tier one.
Right.
And then use that feedback to maybe rejigger your tiers or, you know, figure out what you really want to be doing, because you're going to learn so much more from the feedback you get from your half done minimum viable product than from creating this, you know, great and amazing thing that is great in your dreams, but you don't know if it's actually great because you don't get to pick whether it's great. The people who buy it or don't get to pick whether it's great.
Yeah. People have to want that minimum viable product, and then anything else that happens on top of it is like, is fabulous.
Yeah. Consider your beta version.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I really like that. You know, Kelly, in that the ebook, the sell the bleep out of your ebook. One of the things, and I just want to know what you guys think about this, and if you've done this, is kind of having customers before you launch, like selling, knowing you have people who are all ready to buy it. Like, that's one of the things I said, is to try to pre-sell to people kind of before the program. I'm just wondering what do you guys think of that idea?
I guess I have done that in the sense that I feel if someone is already my subscriber, they're privileged, you know, they get early access or they get a discount or something because they already are so, you know, interested in hearing from me. So I'm going to give them some kind of, you know, advantage to their membership on my list. So I don't know that I've done it in this. I can't remember exactly the strategy that was outlined in that ebook, but I've always sort of thought of it that way in terms of, I mean, and it couldn't hurt if, you know, if you do have some kind of list to ask them what they want and then create the minimum viable version and and do a pre-sale. I mean, of course, that would validate your concept for sure. If you don't have a list, it's a little harder. I remember when I first launched my ebook, I did a pre-sale and I think there were like 40 people on my list and like 20 people bought it. And then I was like, oh God, now what? Who else is there?
Yeah. You're like, my conversion rate is so high. How did I, how high can it get?
I was like, that was stupid. But then I worked with some affiliates that turned out, you know, great. But it was just, I think, you know, it's nice to do if you can do it. I don't know, Pace, maybe you have something more strategic to say about something like that, a pre-sale strategy.
The two kinds of pre-selling that I know about are, one, pretty much what you said, getting people on my list is already a great benefit to a launch, even if nobody actually buys anything, which is why I like giving away the pre-launch content so much, because it gets people on the list, and then, ta-da, you know, that's already a great benefit of a launch. I think that most of our list growth happens during launches, and just a little bit of, you know, evergreen people coming in from the internet, the dark wilds of the internet, wherever they come from. And as for getting people to buy before you've actually, you know, created the product is the other, like, more extreme form of pre-selling. And depending on how that's done, that can either be kind of sleazy or totally awesome. If you try to trick people into thinking that they're buying something that exists and they're like, okay, well, hold on while I go create that, then that sucks. And even if it works in the short term, you're not going to really earn those people's loyalty and trust. But if it's a course and, you know, like, Kelly and I had the outline for the course, but you can't, like, make a course before you do it.
Yeah, especially if it's live.
That's one of the reasons that I really love teaching classes, because for one, it's more engaging that, you know, you get people to actually show up and engage with the material instead of just download an info product that they might just, you know, forget about and never actually consume. And also, it's a higher perceived value. People just value live events more than they value raw information. And yeah. So, like, it, oh, and the third thing, I thought of a third thing, is there's a reason to have urgency and scarcity. Because if you have a course, there's a reason that you can have only 100 people in the course, or, you know, whatever it is that you feel like you can support, because there's a certain amount of customer support and tech support and guidance that you get, even when you don't have one-on-one attention to people. So it's, you know, that's another thing that that paved the way for the way of the peaceful entrepreneur was Kelly and I bitching about false scarcity. People just saying, like, I've only got 100 copies of this e-book.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
That's not how the internet works, people. So, but with a course, you get that that real scarcity that also increases the perceived value and the urgency. So that is kind of a tangent from what you actually asked.
No, but I like, yeah.
Free registration for a course that I like to do.
Yeah. You know, you both actually have mentioned stuff about list building, and I have to ask because people were definitely asking, I was asking them what I should ask you. And one of the things that they want to know across the board is what your favorite list building, you know, favorite and best list building kind of strategies are. I mean, you've said some of it, like as far as launching is a great way to build your list. And I have to agree with that, you know, but I'm curious if there's anything else, because a lot of people are definitely in the sub 100 or less people on their list. And they're looking for, you know, good, legitimate, not scammy ways of growing their lists. Not even like pay-per-click, you know, whatever, like ad ways to they want natural ways to grow their list.
Yeah.
I'll go first. You took too long to think, Kelly.
You're like,
What I would advise is make sure that your website has as its sole purpose in life to get people on your list. Not in a, you know, squeeze page kind of way, but in a way that helps people feel seen and safe, and then helps them understand what value they're going to get from joining your list. Are you going to be giving them useful content? Is there some free offer that they get as soon as they sign up? Even if you don't have one, you can just say, you know, make sure that your website is designed well enough so that there's plenty of easily visible opportunities for people to get on your list, and that there's a reason for them to do so. And then get people to your website, guest posts, social media, whatever you can to get in front of people. So that would be the two stage approach to list building in 3 minutes by Pace.
Okay, Kelly.
Hard to follow. Yeah. I think it took me a while to think because I have done most of my list building through launches. But really all a launch is promoting cool free content. I mean, in a way, I mean, it's just over a shorter period of time than open-ended. And I would absolutely second what Kay said, which was sort of a revelation for me, because you go to these websites and you see a bunch of sidebar ads and you see links to other sites and blog roll and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, just one call to action, which is, I have this thing and you get it if you get on my list. Like, mm-hmm. Take away everything else as much as possible, because you there's one thing you want them to do. If it's not contact you for, like, you know, a consultation or something, then you want a way to keep in touch. And I think the best thing I did was create some, you know, small, think of it as an ebook launch checklist for a while, and mm-hmm. something like a checklist or a worksheet or something really, you know, hands-on seemed to really appeal to my people, as far as like, great, you know, this is like something I can use right away. And with an opt-in offer like that, I would err on the side of kind of instant gratification, something that can really if you're going to create something, something that can be easily consumed and easily applied, will go a long way and will give a great impression if someone can actually get a benefit right off the bat from it. But, you know, even just telling them that you have a newsletter that then this is what's in it, I would go in, you know, into some detail as you can about what you talk about and what they're going to receive. That could be enough as well, as long as they're not distracted by 50 other things to do. So, yeah,
and affiliate ads and go buy the Firestarter sessions, like little bet, you know, whatever that's on that you can put in your sidebar.
It's tempting because those are so cool looking, right? But mm-hmm. it's just, you know, it takes away.
Yeah. Well, it's been an hour, which I cannot believe. I could just chat with you guys for a while about this quite a while. So, but I don't want to take too much more of your time. Is there any kind of like last piece? I mean, I think you've said the main thing, which is just do it already. You know, if you've got the minimum viable product, just do it. Don't wait, you know? And, yeah. I agree with that. I think I even said this to you once, Kelly, like I actually believe in burning your first pancake. Just do it. Just get it out of the way. Get it out of the pan so you can make the good ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Know? That would be in line with my last advice, which is this first one, if you're a true launch virgin, so to speak, then that's a horrible analogy.
I'm sorry.
Just go sleep with anybody. No.
just go do it.
When metaphors go wrong.
Yeah, when metaphors go wrong. But, I would look at it, your first launch, not as, oh my God, how much money am I going to make? But what am I going to learn from marketing myself in this way? And let's see how many people I can get on my list and let's have some fun because, you know, it's a party. Really, a launch is a party and you can make it as simple or as complex as you want, but it's an excuse to get out there and start showing people what you have. And I think the sooner you do that, the sooner better.
Word.
I agree. When, you know, my advice is, I guess, comes after that. When you've had a launch that, you know, either was a complete flop or didn't do as well as you expected, my advice to you is, you know, obviously to not lose heart because it's probably just some trick you haven't learned yet, some way in the, something about marketing that you haven't learned. People study marketing for decades and you probably haven't learned it all yet. And the best way that I've found to learn is by watching what people who are successful in business and aligned with your values also do. Not what they teach, which is useful, but what they actually do. So I've learned so much from just joining some lists that I'm never going to buy anything from. I just want to see how they do their launches.
Mm-hmm.
And then paying attention and noticing patterns and then, you know, not copying and pasting anything, but learning the outline and learning the strategies. And that really helps the next launch be a little better. And then the next one's a little better. And then, you know, a few years later, you're doing pretty well for yourself.
I love it. Well, thank you, ladies. I had a great time chatting with you and, so I'm sure we're gonna have some very happy people because they have their whole view of what launches should be like, and I hope now that they have a little bit more peace of mind that it can be whatever they want it to be. So thank you very much.
Thanks,
Anne. Okay. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'll see you in class.
See ya.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.